Hello and welcome to Crank the Amp. I'm Casey Kibber-Fisk. I'm here with Ollie Rudgwick and Aurora Krogh, and we are going to talk about the albums of 2016.
Yeah, that's what you're on about.
Yeah, nice.
So, Ollie, tell a bit about your pick.
Your top three.
Top three, yes. So we start off with Iggy Pop's Post-Pop Depression at three. Fantastic album, obviously we'll talk about them in detail in a little bit. Sunflower Bean and Moonshaped Pool by Radiohead.
So start off with Post-Pop Depression. What do you like about that, Ollie?
It's a relaxed, laid-back Iggy Pop album. I don't think there's nothing you can really dislike about it. I mean, Aurora will disagree with me, but I don't think there's much you can actually actively dislike about the album. It's
You speak.
I mean, laid back is not something you usually associate with Iggy Pop. I mean, you look at the Stooges, the different onstage antics there, and it really is a complete juxtaposition to what you see from the current Iggy, which is, on his tour, he's been had his band dressed in like full tuxedos. Even he's been wearing a blazer, although he did rip it off after about two songs at the Royal Albert Hall. So what do you think about the new look Iggy almost, I guess?
It's a different change in direction, isn't it? You know, he's got to go with the times. In my opinion, anyway, and it's Josh Homme is fantastic on the album. You'll point that out.
Yeah, he's got some fantastic backing vocals, and also when he did the live, I think the thing about Post Pop Depression why it probably didn't make my top five albums is because I think actually the live stuff that he did this year was much better than his album. The Royal Albert Hall performance was brilliant. He just did solo stuff, and some of Josh Homme's backing vocals on stuff like Lust for Life was sort of harked back to David Bowie's backing vocals on the original versions.
Yeah, I think Homme gives a great sort of balance to the album. I think he's a very much goes back to Idiot and it goes back to Lust for Life album. Yeah, as you point out as well, it's a very much a Bowie-esque performance from Homme. He's a great producer, very good writer as well, and he seems to have brought that in with Iggy as well. And it's sort of with Matt Helders in there as well, you've got songs like Like Sunday, great song, Like an Arctic Monkey song, probably a hangover from AM if you're being a little bit rude about the song, but it's a cracking song. It's a really good album as well.
The most successful, I think, he's been for a long while. I think for someone like Iggy, who in most interviews is very humble, I think it's interesting that some of his lyrics on the latest record, stuff like "You're with America's greatest living poet, you should be wearing your finest gown." I think it's great that he's actually embracing himself a bit more, if you know what I mean.
It's a fact, but it doesn't sound arrogant, though, does it? With Iggy, he's got the background. He's made some fantastic records, and the vocals on this album are severely underrated by a lot of people. The lyrics is probably his best album he's ever appeared on, really, in terms of his vocals and his lyrics as well. Fantastic lyrics in the album. And the vocals on it are gnarly, really, really rough, and it sounds unbelievable with this with a big band sort of feel to it.
So Sunflower Bean next, Dolly.
I was surprised with it, actually, yeah, because
something we all agree on, I think, is that it's one of the best records of the year.
It's definitely a very impressive, and considering it's a debut album as well, it's over the moon.
I just love the contrast in the vocals, and like I said to Casey, it sounds a little bit like the Subways used to be. It's a little bit...
Really, though, the Subways...
I didn't think it was such a Subway sound. Like I said, it was more that kind of CBGB's New York kind of sound, which we got with the Strokes and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and then you go back to stuff like the Velvet Underground and Television.
But you also have the very classical vocals. Like, I mean, Julia, is it Cumming or Cunning?
Cumming,
yeah. She did actually study classical singing, and that transfers really good on the record.
She reminds me a little bit of an early Blondie.
She definitely got the attitude, but I think it was actually better than Blondie.
I think her vocals are fantastic on the album. I was listening to it, and like, I'll admit, I never listened to them before. Before I put the album on my phone, and listened to it the last couple of weeks. It is unbelievable. It's the lyric, that vocal's almost haunting when you go with like almost with the rocky.
And the harmonies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's something new for that kind of New York sound and band to have like a dual fronted band, because in those, like, you know, you've got a long line, I've just read a few out the while, but none of them really have a front man and a front woman. And I think that works really well for Sunflower Bean. It holds them in a good esteem. For me, the great thing about the record is how balanced it is.
Yeah.
Songs like Easier Said, which I wrote in my piece.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
It's just absolutely heartbreaking. And you put that in contrast with stuff like War Watcher, if you know what I mean. And somehow they still seemingly flow from one to the next, if you know what I mean. Even though War Watcher is a much heavier song, it still fits in. It's still got a similar vibe to it.
Yeah, it really is. That's really the point. It's a really brilliantly well-balanced record overall. So your first...
Well, first, yeah, Moonshaped Pool, Radiohead. I mean, for me,
anticipation, yeah. That album.
it is just an unbelievable album. Like you said, the flow of the albums in... I could argue all three of them have fantastic flow in the albums. They've all got a balance and a variety of tracks. And, I mean, Radiohead are the masters of changing with the times. And it's probably the best content they've had since the early 2000s, maybe even the late 90s, really.
I disagree with you, but it's definitely a really good album. And it's actually framed with content that were trashed from other albums, which is... interesting.
The song Burn the Witch, I think they had that for quite a while. They played it live a few times before.
Yeah, both the first and the last song on the album is actually old tracks that they've played live but never recorded. I mean, it's cool seeing them bring back some of their old vibes in a new format.
I'm not a massive Radiohead fan, as you two know, but I think the song Burn the Witch, when they released that, it did make me stand up and take notice. I thought that was a really good, solid single.
I don't think
Burn
the Witch is necessarily the best song.
Maybe not.
But it worked that they... released that as a single because it was very shocking at the time. And the video is absolutely...
It was fantastic.
It's a great video. Yeah. I mean, it's a fantastic video.
It's terrifying.
Petrifying.
No, I just love the album because there's so much variety in it. I mean, yeah. Tom York's voice is always... I don't think anyone can say that... Well, obviously, you've got to be a fan of Tom York's voice, firstly, but I don't think he's...
It's not for everyone, but it's good.
It's a great... It's a wonderful... And the lyrics in it are just magnificent. I mean, if you can get a band and just have their... lyrics, without even necessarily without the music. The music
is
just
one of the best writers of the century, though.
Oh, he's definitely up there. There's a few more you can put with him. Maybe you can chuck in. You could maybe chuck in Alex Turner in that debate, but I don't think there's many more really. There's probably a couple that you can name, but Tom York's got to be up there for the last 20 years at least.
But yeah, moving along, Casey.
All right. Well, my number three is the already mentioned Sunflower Bean. I don't think we need to go into too much more detail. I mean, the thing that really plucked up for me with Sunflower Bean's first record is just that. It lays down such a good foundation.
Just mentioning, the name of the record is Human Ceremonies.
Yeah. And Human Ceremony. Yeah. It's a really good debut album, but I think they've got so much more to give from that album. It just seems like it's laying down the foundation. It's almost like the Is This It before The Room on Fire.
Interesting you saying that, because you see them evolve in a very different format when you see them live. So I definitely think that there is something in what you're saying, that they have more to give.
But, so that's my number three. And number two is Suede, and I'm probably going to be accused of being very biased with their album Night Thoughts. And I just think it's such a unique concept to release an album and then get Roger Sargent, who's probably been one of the best people at documenting bands down the years. He made a fabulous film about the Libertines called There Are No Innocent Bystanders. And then he's really followed that up with his work on Night Thoughts and making a film which just suits the album down to the ground. When they played it at the Roundhouse behind the screen playing the film, they did it to perfection. They did not mess anything up. I think that was what probably put it so high up, because it was so ambitious.
It's definitely a bold album. But, I'll categorize it as an oldie but goodie.
The thing I like about it is that it's so far down the line, and they've kept to the same kind of storytelling that they've done on their first couple of albums, yet Brett Anderson's sort of got older and he's realised that, and his songs are now about the same sort of character that he writes as on Suede and on Dogman Star. But, you know, 40 years down the line, shall we say, where he's a father, if you know what I mean.
It is more mature, definitely. Mm,
stuff like When You're Young and stuff, references back to the Drowners, and I love how they reference their old stuff, and I think they return to these characters every so often, and I really like that about Suede. That's what makes them one of my favourite bands.
No, I'll agree with you. It was a fantastic album. It missed out on my top five, probably, just...
Narrowly, yeah.
It's a great album.
It wasn't close to mine, but I'm not a major Suede fan.
But I think there's a song on there called I Can't Give Her What She Wants, which is probably the absolute... my absolute favourite song on the album.
It's a good statement as well.
It is one of the best slow songs Suede have ever released, and that is something to say when you've got a band that have written things like The Asphalt World and...
Sleeping Pills,
exactly, and Pantomime Horse, which is probably my favourite Suede song of all. But, yeah, moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Number one, Casey.
The fantastic Yak that have almost saved music for this new album. It is no...
Oh, bless you.
I say that with no doubt in my mind. Oh, their show at Scala was just incredible. It just showcased everything they gave on the album.
And the album title is?
Alas Salvation. On Octopus Records.
And the Fat Possum, that is.
And the Fat Possum. But yeah, the show at Scala was just absolute carnage. They ripped through everything, played the new single, which is brilliant as well. But looking at the album The Last Salvation, I think it just takes what they give in these live performances. And I think I said it basically takes the adrenaline from the live performances and it injects it into you through your record needle, basically. It's such a powerful album, and it's just got that sort of tension, the nervous tension that you get from the Stooges and the Cramps, which are two of my favourite bands. And it's just right, really up my street. And I really just think it's something that's so needed. Something that really there isn't enough of, in my opinion.
Yeah, it has that reckless vibe that you definitely need someone to just shout "fuck you" to everything.
"Harbor the Feeling" is probably my favourite single off that record. It just got such a good bass riff behind it. And
I think my favourite is actually the title track.
I love that.
As short as it is.
I mean, they played it.
It's brilliant, and especially live, it fucking kills it.
I saw them support the Libertines, and I think they played that song 5 times. In between songs, they played covers and stuff. But they just kept going back to it. I love how they just fit that song in live.
No, I just like how much of a throwback it is. It feels like an album that could be 30 or 40 years old, and the fact that it just seems like punk. Like there's no sort of time.
I don't like thinking backwards about music. No. I'm just like, it's a very much a new hope for that genre.
Yeah.
Because we've for so long spoken about how punk is dead. And Yak has now gone on and given it a new voice, which I'm very, very respectable of.
Yeah, they basically take the Stooges and the Cramps and they take it to their own place, if you know what I mean, and do what they want to do and bring it into the modern era, if you know what I mean. I think that's the great thing about the record. I think another important thing to say about Yak is they're not just a bunch of noise. I really love Ollie Burson's lyrics on it. Stuff like on Victorious, I found a country in your heart that I would like to terrorise. I just think that's such a good lyric, and there's so many good little plays on words and stuff. Just so many little fun little twists of lyric that just sort of knock you off your perch almost.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, the lyrical work is incredible, and you don't see that in a lot of punk albums.
No, exactly. That's the great thing about them. I appreciate that
they've gone to the lengths they have to keep the value of lyrical content on there.
Yeah, definitely. So moving on to you then, Aurora.
Yeah. So, pissing off everyone when I say this, but my number three is the 1975's I Like It When You Sleep, For You're So Beautiful, Yet So Unaware of It. Only the longest and cheesiest title of the year, but it's an actual, in my opinion, it's a groundbreaking record in terms of it dares to do a lot of things that have never been done before.
I mean, as a band, the 1975 have always been a thing where, I mean, I've given them quite a lot of abuse down the years. I mean, about a few years. But I've called them things like Justin Bieber with guitars and stuff. But
they are a hate-love concept, though. They're not for everyone, but
I feel
obviously
like I should give them
another
chance.
Going from the worst album of 2014 to best record in 2016 at the end of me is definitely an effort that many can't do. What I really admire with this album is that it's actually better than their first record, and usually you see that with the bad number two, the follow-up is always worse.
Yeah,
we've talked so much about this, how the second record never lives up to the debut. They have gone to the length and they have expanded their material in such a way, and the lyrical content on that record is absolutely beautiful. Probably one of the best written albums of this year, I think.
No, I mean, it's a perfect fusion, isn't it, between sort of like pop and indie as well.
It has so many influences, though. It's like R&B and pop and then electro bits, and you just like, it's a bit all over the place, but somehow it's very coherent to their sound.
I think the other thing about that album that really interests me is the fact there's a few instrumentals on the album, I believe.
Yeah, they have a few tracks that's literally instrumental one, like Please Be Naked. But that is definitely up there by being one of the more interesting tracks. But then you also have songs like The Sound, which is super poppy. Like,
I think it nearly got given to One Direction.
It was supposed to be given to One Direction, but that never happened because Matt Healy doesn't really want to work for other people, which I very much respect.
Yeah, respect that.
It's an appreciated album, and I think it's had a lot of shit that it doesn't deserve. And, like, it's a lot of dislike. I mean, like, loads of people get intimidated by the aesthetics of them, being like, they care more about the looks than the music. But if you actually listen to the music, it's high quality. It's very impressive. And the fact that they, throughout this entirely, like, good thing of making it, like, they have made it more than anyone this year. They've gone fucking huge, and still, they're on Dirty Hit, a tiny indie label. And I respect that they still keep the indie roots and keep this record label that definitely have made them a part of what they are.
And I'm going to be the one that cuts in, but what about your number two?
Moving away from the pink neon lights of the
1975.
Moving on to the lovely black and white aesthetic with a bit of pink in there as well, to Rough Trade's own wall paint and their new album, Heads Up.
This is something I feel that the two of us may struggle to talk
about. Yes, exactly.
We haven't heard it. So, Aurora... Explain Warpaint's latest record.
Warpaint's latest record is an interesting one because it's, I mean, like, Warpaint is, what's good about them is that they still play on the same vibe as they've always done, like a bit mystic, melodic, very much female based, and they are very strong in that vibe that they keep. But at the same time, they have songs like New Song, which is definitely entirely new for their material, and I feel like this album is less, it's not as dark as the previous one. Their self-titled Warpaint album that came out in 2014. So it's actually just 2 years ago. And they've already gone out. Like, I mean, bass player Jenny Lindberg went off and made her own solo career. But they've still managed to come out with, I think, this most, probably their most bold and mature album to date. And it's just, it's not that much to say about it because it's not really mind-blowing different. It's just a really, really high quality record with extremely good amount of good tracks on it.
I've only heard very little of Warpaint as a band altogether. So yeah, I do want to check out this latest offering because I've seen it everywhere. It seems to feature high on most people's album of the year lists and especially yours.
Yeah, definitely very high. But I appreciate female artists in general and I feel like as the female alibi here, I need to bring them up a bit.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's only proven by Sunflower being doing so well that there are some really great female acts out there. I mean,
but at the same time, it pisses me off that you even think of them as like female and male separate because it's all music.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Although it's so subjective,
and
it needs to be sort of.
Warpaint are very good in like not fronting that they're necessarily a girl band. I mean, you have bands like Haim, that's definitely fronting that, oh yeah, we're a pure girl band.
And Deep Valley are very like that, aren't they? Yeah.
And I appreciate Warpaint's like kind of that they don't front it, they just front themselves as musicians, and I respect that so much because they are so high quality musicians and their melodies are amazing. And obviously Jenny Lee Lindberg is the best bass player, probably one of the best that's around right now. Very underappreciated though.
I mean, I think a lot of the, I think 2016 is almost the year of the bass player. Because,
there's a good amount of bass players.
I was speaking about in an earlier article I wrote about Issa Hassan from Savages. And also Andy Jones from Yak is a great bass player as well. And then, and like you say, Jenny Lee Lindberg to it as well. So
there's a lot of good bass players
coming out.
Interesting,
sort of this year.
As there have been usually the.
I think I trashed bass players
the other day. Bass players are usually quite underappreciated. So just bringing her up there, she's made a solo career for herself. So definitely, yeah, she's very appreciated. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so what's number one then?
Moving to number one.
Which I think we all know which one it's going to be.
Sunflower Bean, Human Ceremony.
Yeah, do you want to say anything that hasn't been said already?
Yeah, well, I had the pleasure of interviewing this band on the debut day of their
showing
album.
Showing off.
Yeah, no, but as I spoke to them about this, what's really admirable is that they were around for a while before releasing their album, which is a new thing you see a lot now, meaning... Earlier, it was more on about getting signed than releasing a debut album. Whereas now, people maybe release 3, 4, up to 5 EPs before actually coming around to making a debut, which is something that's new and very interesting. Having people spending a lot more time developing their sound before going and actually recording a debut album. And I think it's interesting seeing this new trend in music. And I spoke to Sunflower Bean about it, and they were just like, I think they spent up to 3 months just recording and re-recording, going around in the studio and changing things around. And I think they mentioned like recording over at Click Track and then demoing again and going back and forth and putting the whole effort into making the album what it is. And that's probably what makes it such a good album because it's a lot of work behind. And as Julia said, she loves the studio work, but I think the guys are more into the live thing. So it's definitely a lot are going to see from them in the future.
It does look very bright, and it proves that they've worked hard as well.
I mean, I watched a video of them doing Lou Reed's Vicious, a cover of it, and it was just so good. It had Nick Kivlin on lead vocals instead of
Yeah, he has a good vocal.
And he was he really pulled off that kind of Lou Reed style to do Vicious.
What didn't make your cut, guys?
What didn't make my cut? I would probably start off because of the last one. I've got Ellipsis from Biffy Clyro.
Oh, good album.
It's a good album. It's probably the best they've released, probably since Only Revolutions, which got all the Brit Award nominations.
Disagree, but go ahead.
And the second one that made almost made my cut was Viola Beach's self-titled album as well.
Yeah.
Regardless of what happened, obviously, this year, earlier on this year in March, but...
I just find that album a bit strange because obviously you're not sure if the band really wanted that to be released, that that's what come out of them. But it's an alright album, but you never know because it's obviously during the tragical events happening. Casey?
Well, fifth and fourth on my list on the website are Bowie and Telegram, but I'm just going to look at some of the other records that I thought were great this year. The return of Wolf Mother was something I was really pleased about. There's nothing unique about this band in the slightest, but they're just fucking brilliant. It's straight out rock, basically, sort of three chords, and that's all you need. But like the other one I was going to mention was Chaosmosis by Primal Scream, heavily featuring Sky Ferreira. I think that's a great move by Bobby Gillespie to get someone like Sky Ferreira on his record, sort of still looking at the modern artists, if you know what I mean, and the sort of latest artists to influence him. And Where the Light Gets In, the single on that record is absolutely phenomenal. The sort of vocal interplay between Ferreira and Gillespie is quite something on that record. It's almost like, I was speaking to someone the other day and they said, it's like a greatest hits album without the hits on it, if you know what I mean. It sounds like...
Yeah.
It sounds like a little bit like Exterminator. And the other one I both mentioned is one that you put third
on. One problem for me with that album is that it has a bit of a lack of identity.
It does, that's exactly right. Because it almost is Primal Scream, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, yeah, they've sort of made almost three albums into one, if you know what I mean. Like three of their previous albums.
Definitely. I just don't think they bring on too much new on that album. But then they got Sky Ferreira to kind of... be the new thing.
In
the old.
I mean, the other album is one you put third, Ollie, for me, is Post-Pop Depression. The reason I didn't put it in my top five is because probably I would pick the Live at the Royal Albert Hall album ahead of the actual studio album because I was...
Well, you know, live recordings aren't always good.
Mm, yeah. But I was lucky enough to be there and it was just such a phenomenal gig. I'm a big fan of the Stooges, as you both know, and I was really, like, worried to see how they would do without playing any Stooges songs. Given that at the time I hadn't really heard a lot of Iggy's back catalogue as a solo artist, and hearing it that evening was actually better than listening to it before I went, because it just Josh Homme's guitar work on some of the older tracks, stuff like Mass Production, which is a track that's very electronic on record. Suddenly Josh has turned this into like a Queens of the Stone Age style stoner rock track. And it really works so well. Mass Production's been probably my favourite song they've been playing on this tour.
See, me too then. Name your two to finish off. Your two that missed off to finish off them. Your two missed down.
Oh yeah,
top,
yeah.
Sorry. Rob.
Well, I'm gonna go a bit different and just mention a few that I think have done a brilliant job this year. One is someone there to me, which is a Norwegian band called Ludvig Moon, which released their debut Kin, which is a great album worth checking out. Not saying too much about it, but it sounds very Scandinavian. And then we have Whitney, which is an interesting constellation of artists from Smith Western and Immortal Orchestra coming together to make new sounds from the Chicago scene. And the Chicago scene has actually been a busy one this year, as we have Twin Peaks as well coming with their third studio album now. Is it Down in Heaven, that's called? Which is a brilliant album. Amazing live.
Hold on a second. We've missed something.
What have we missed?
We've missed Everything You've Come to Expect by The Last Shadow Puppets. I feel that deserves a mention.
Yeah, same. It's
well, that's Everything You've Come to Expect by us for getting someone major.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, name dropping some more before we're rounding off. Thomas Cohen was out with his first solo album this
year.
That's
very interesting as a record.
It's very interesting, as he used, most people probably know him as the frontman of Scum, but he has taken 2 years of new music after his the death of his wife. That was pretty heavily featured in the tabloids. And he's now back with this album that is a heartbreaking ode to love and loss. and it's a gorgeous album, very floaty, kind of 70 vibes. Another guy that's released a new album this year was Jake Berg. His final, his first entirely self-done album, I believe. Very interesting album, trying a bit of new things, trying a bit of rap, trying a bit of new angles to his song, but still very much keeping the same essence to his recordings. I mean, we were lucky enough to discover him live, which was an amazing show, even sat down. Okay, any more albums? What are we looking forward for next year, briefly?
Next year, The Strokes.
Going next, but then Temples.
Yes, Temples. I've been listening to their album a lot recently. I love
Temples. The Kettering Gang is back again with their new follow-up to their amazing
I can't remember the chap's name, but the lead singer of Temples is it's like
James Bagshaw.
I knew it was James something. But yeah, he's like he's almost like a reincarnation of Mark Bolan with his sort of...
He's amazing. Super talented. I shot him at Oslo earlier this autumn and they showcased some brilliant tunes, so I have a lot of faith in that new album. And then we have Sindara Karma finally coming with their debut as well. Very excited.
Yeah, the other one I've got is the Jackals. Slightly more rocky, should we say. It's Libertine's frontman Carl Brett's other band. And he said it's going to be a more heavier approach for next year's album as well. So it might be quite interesting to see a rock.
Is that set to release next year?
Yeah, he said he's in the studio. He's been in the studio with them for the last couple of months since Pete Docky's released his own solo record this year as well.
Yeah, then we have obviously we have Wallfellas back in the studio, so hopefully we can expect something from them next year. Maybe, we'll see.
I'm secretly hoping for Peace 3, I think.
Yeah, and they're teasing. They should honestly be out with something soon, my opinion.
I think there's so much to look forward to next year that my mind's almost gone cloudy of what is actually coming.
Who knows? It's an exciting year, so we're definitely... We've
definitely got over time.
2016 has been great, and 2017 looks to be good as well.
Even better, I feel.
Yeah, this is Crank the Amp.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.